Thank you and welcome to the big finale. I'm Bruce Collins. First things first, I'd like to give a big thank you to a great man by the name of Sheldon Day. If not for Sheldon, Dr. Wood and I would not be talking tonight. Sheldon's website is outstanding. It is thelightofdayradioshow.com. Again, that's thelightofdayradioshow.com. My guest tonight is Dr. Judy Wood. Dr. Judy Wood is a former professor of mechanical engineering with research interests in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, optical methods, deformation analysis, and the materials characterization of biomaterials and composite materials. She is a member of the Society for Experimental Mechanics, co-founded SEM's Biological Systems and Materials Division, and currently serves on the SEM Composite Materials Technical Division. Dr. Wood started to question the events of 9/11 on that same day when what she saw and heard on television was contradictory and appeared to violate the laws of physics. Since that day, she has used the knowledge of engineering mechanics to prove that the collapse of the World Trade Center Twin Towers could not have happened as the American public was told. Welcome to the big finale, Dr. Judy Wood. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's an honor to have you on, and how ironic, because 24 hours ago there was a big media release on the feds finally, after 7 years, solving the 9/11 mystery of Building 7. Only took them 7 years. Now, before we get into that, and we will talk about that tonight, if you could, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
What aspect? There's quite a lot there. Professionally, my bachelor's degree is in civil engineering, structural engineering. Master's is in engineering mechanics, which is sort of like applied physics. Mm-hmm. And my PhD is materials engineering science, which is an interdisciplinary degree. It's basically another degree in engineering mechanics.
Excellent.
People probably wonder what that is.
Do you want to expand on that?
Applied physics is probably the best description. And my area of expertise is optical methods for measuring deformation of materials, and also experimental mechanics, looking at real evidence, and then from there figuring out what happened. At all different levels. Also, it's interesting, from yesterday, my PhD dissertation was in thermal expansion.
Excellent. Now, you have an outstanding website. It's drjudywood.com. And before we get into this, just so people can get a background on your website and can go there tonight, what can people find at your website, drjudywood.com?
A lot of evidence. I have mainly just been accumulating the evidence as I see. And the trickiest thing with 9/11 is to be able to see the evidence anew, not how you're told to interpret it, but to see what's there for how you interpret it. Because 9/11 was a psychological event, psychological operation. And folks, this is one thing I've learned. Folks tend to keep asking questions until they get an answer. Well, if they're immediately given an answer, they stop asking questions. And they just repeat that answer over and over again, and forget to ever check to see if it's correct. Mm-hmm. And with 9/11, who'd want to look back? That means you have to relive that horrible day all over again. So the answers they're given immediately continue to perpetuate.
That's so true. Now, and again, I want to say it's drjudywood.com and Dr. D-R. It's D-R, so it's drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. Now, Judy, what made you first turn your attention to the events of 9/11 and why?
Well, on that day, we saw the buildings unravel like a sweater. Something's not right there. Buildings don't unravel like that. you would expect something like an avalanche. You know, if it were going to be on the ground by the end of the day, you'd expect something, you know, move a chunkity chunk, you know, something bump something else, and just sort of haphazard, random things, you know, falling at different places.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get a building turning into powder. If it would even fall down. Now, buildings are built with, you know, you have a certain safety factor, but there's also an importance factor that multiplies by that. So if they built the World Trade Center out in the middle of Iowa in a cornfield, there's certain regulations about, you know, safety factors, how much you overbuild it just in case unforeseen happens here, there, and wherever, and the different components. But if you build it in the middle of Manhattan, if that thing goes over, it takes out everything else. So that's the important factor that multiplies all of the requirements. It has to surpass all of the requirements. For example, hospitals have high importance factors because if there is a disaster, you need that hospital more than you need, you know, the county dog pound. So there's a lot higher requirements. And the World Trade Center, you bet, was built way overbuilt so that really nothing could take it down just about.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Nothing did take it down. It didn't go down.
Now, for those joining this type of discussion for the first time, it's difficult for these ideas to come forward, and I applaud you for doing that, first of all. But you know, when you have a vast, I know for myself, for instance, in preparing for this show tonight, I really almost did a test of people around me, coworkers and people that I came in contact, and talked to them about 9/11. And from that, you really only get a small composite of people who think that it wasn't you know, a bunch of terrorists and airplanes knocking down buildings. And then even smaller than that, and maybe you're the only dissenting voice of that, there, you know, your concept or your beliefs through your research are even smaller than the bigger 9/11 truth movement, which is even smaller than the group that thinks that it was, you know, terrorists landing a plane. So for those joining this type of discussion for the first time, where this is going to be an eye opener, can you give us a general description of energy-directed weaponry?
Well, for those who are just starting out, I would suggest they look through the billiard ball example.
Oh, okay, great.
That I have on my, it's a link on my front page. It says start here, and it's a graph. And the reason why I suggest that is if you can't handle the story not being like what we were told on TV that day, it might be good to look at something else that is not the same as, you know, the images that we were trained on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just think of the timing, somebody drops a ball off the roof, and it takes some time for it to hit the pavement way down at the bottom. And then you try other scenarios. That's 9.22 seconds in a vacuum, no air resistance, for it to go from the roof of the World Trade Center to the pavement below. And then if you think if you get a stop along the way to hit various floors, and if each set of floors shattered, as we saw with dust coming out, if that was shattering, that material is not there to push the next floor down. Next floor somehow fails, and then it falls. Next one fails, and it falls. And if you start looking at the timing of that, pretty soon you see how that's impossible. Then take that back and look at the actual story, and you can see then that the story we're given cannot be true. We were told, and it's either NIST report or the FEMA report, I think it's also NIST said it, that the North Tower took 8 seconds. It took 8 seconds for the tower to go away, but it would take 9.22 seconds in a vacuum to drop that ball off the roof onto the pavement. So we can see there's a problem.
Yeah.
So some explaining is needed. But after that, just looking at the data, just let the data tell you what happened. Let the evidence tell you what happened. You start looking around the site. I've gathered thousands of photos, literally thousands. And I started cataloging all the different phenomena. You don't, you know, take a multiple choice test. Like, let's say we have a BB gun, a firecracker, and a wad of bubble gum. It's got to be one of those things, because that's all we know about. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. That's a pretty bad way to determine what happened. Let's say we don't know what happened. We don't know what the choices are out there, because we don't know what types of secret weapons belong to other countries and who has what. We only know what's in front of us.
Yeah.
And what's in front of us is the evidence. And you start looking at it, and there's a wide variety of, I call it symptoms, of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Pieces of evidence. One curious thing is the flipped cars. You have upside-down cars. But then right next to them are trees fully covered with leaves. Well, if the wind was that strong to flip a car, why are the leaves still on the trees? And those cars don't look like they tumbled. They just look like they're parked, except upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And windows are blown out in the buildings around. There's some that have double-paned windows, and only the outside window is missing. So that wasn't something that flew through the window.
Mm-hmm.
I call those stab wounds. It wasn't a stab wound. It's just the window shattered. All the fire trucks, just about all of them, have their windows gone. There's never any discussion about broken glass on the pavement. Matter of fact, there's people running around barefoot in this one set of pictures I have that was taken right after the second tower got its hole. Now, notice I say when the building got its hole. I'm not being presumptuous about what caused it. Something happened and the building got a hole in it. And just taking in the data. And that's an important thing for being able to observe. If you call it something, like you say the airplane hit it, mm-hmm. then you repeat that over and over again, you can't see outside of that.
Yeah.
Like you keep talking about the collapse, and you're already predicting what your conclusion is going to be. It's an interesting thing how that works. Mm-hmm. So when I saw a phenomenon, I just started naming them. Like flip cars, and then toasted cars. I don't mean toasted as in cooked. I don't know what caused it, but they're toast. They're history. They have to take them as a write-off. They're, you know, totaled, or one part of it is.
Hmm.
You have paper right next to these toasted vehicles. That's perfectly fine. Not burned. As a matter of fact, some portions of the vehicles look like they have a brand new wax job. So, gee, how could that have been heat that caused this? And the plastic molding inside the window is perfectly fine, where right on the other side of that, you have blistered up paint and metal, as though somebody poured acid on it.
Hmm.
And then you see all this fuming. I call it fuming. I'm not saying smoke. We don't know what it is. You start looking around, you see all sorts of strange things.
Mm-hmm.
That you normally would make assumptions to if you put a particular name identifying it. If you don't know the process, just give it an arbitrary name. And there's some particular things that really struck me. One is, I call them wheat checks. They're mm-hmm. the prefab sections that made up the outer wall, three columns wide by three stories tall. And they're come in sets with spandrel belts across them. They look like wheat checks. And we would see these flying through the air, trailing dust. And as they approach the ground, they're just dissolving. And they never actually hit the ground. It's like ice cream melting as it falls through the air.
Huh.
People videotaping on the ground when these things are coming down, you don't hear a big thud. It just seems like you're in the middle of a snowstorm. Maybe some sleet kind of sound, but nothing going boom, boom, on the ground. And these things could be, what, 20 tons?
Mm-hmm.
Huge things. Mm-hmm. Well, if you get a 20-ton tractor trailer rolling past your house, you hear it.
Yeah.
And if you're standing on the street, nobody can hear you talk as it goes by.
That's right.
But that wasn't the case when these wheat checks were coming down. Then as they finished coming down, on the upwind side, the air cleared out, and you could see blue sky. But then a little bit later, you notice it starts rising up from the pavement as very, very fine mist, like a haze. And we know that dust couldn't have settled out of the air in that amount of time. It has to be that coarse dust hit the ground and continued breaking down into finer and finer dust, so fine that it began rising.
Wow.
So there's some weird things going on. So now we know we have something weird.
Yeah. Now this story came out yesterday that the feds finally, after 7 years, have solved the 9/11 mystery of Building 7, and they claim that it's the ash from the fire and falling debris hitting the building, which, you know, even AOL, which was one of the sources of reporting the story, said that that's never happened before. Now, there was reports of ash, but it really was a powdery substance, wasn't it?
There was powder that came down.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't anything. I don't think anyone has any pictures of something flying through the air, trailing a flame.
Right.
Like flame throwing.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think it's like you're saying, when it's so ingrained that there was an airplane that hit, that, you know, people automatically think of flaming, you know, ash flying all over the place.
Right. And what is interesting is the building wasn't, Building 7 wasn't on fire after Tower 2 went poof.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, I have these weird terms. Went poof, meaning it went away. I'm not saying it collapsed. It just, it's no longer there.
Yeah.
But it went poof. And Building 7 didn't have any flames coming out of it at that time. And while Building 1 was still standing, Building 7 later had all sorts of fumes coming out of it. Just mysteriously started up.
Yeah. Now, what are some common myths, and we have touched on this, but are there any other common myths about what happened on 9/11?
Oh, there's plenty. There's probably a lot that I haven't heard of, because I try to stick with what I'm looking at, so I don't get, you know, distracted, because that's what they're designed for.
Yeah.
People get repeated, and pretty soon people think they're true. The biggest one probably is molten metal. The biggest myth that I've seen. And
so
fires for 99 days.
So in other words, when after the collapse, there was molten metal at the base of the Twin Towers, correct?
No, that's the myth.
No, that's what I say. That was the myth of what
people
believe.
And it gets repeated enough times that people don't stop and think of, you know, the logic behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had a broken water main that afternoon, and you could see people wading out into the lake. You know, the middle of the street looked like a lake. And if you had molten metal under there, how does it stay, you know, underwater without there being a steam explosion?
Mm-hmm.
And the same with all the fire hoses. It's my understanding that Chernobyl blew up because of a steam explosion. You can't put water on molten metal without a steam explosion. And so, also about it being hot on the pile. They call it a pile to make you think that there's something there, where it's pretty much at ground level. And as I say, the rescue workers had to, you know, work horizontally. They either walked horizontally or they rappelled down into an open space. They didn't climb up. And so the rescue workers, the other myth is that their steel-toed boots melted after a few hours. And this has been repeated so many times, it's amazing how folks will say it without realizing what they're saying. We had no reports of burned feet.
Yeah.
How do you have melted steel-toed boots without cooking the feet inside? But it's amazing how folks, you know, repeat what they hear. We all do that. It's human nature, I think. Because
mm-hmm.
people are looking for answers, they're given answers, and they quit asking questions.
Now, on your website, you also talk about Hurricane Aaron, and for some reason, this seemed to be ignored by the media. Tell us about this hurricane, and also, what was the size of it in comparison to, say, like a Hurricane Katrina?
When it was right outside of New York City, it was about the same diameter or larger than Hurricane Katrina.
Hmm.
And the interesting, you know, features of it, it aimed straight for New York City. I mean, just a straight line from Bermuda towards New York City. It was the fastest wind speed the day before.
Mm-hmm.
But when, like a figure skater, when they put their arms out, they slow down. When it got right outside New York City, it sort of spun out and spread out a little bit. And then the next day, packed up and moved out of town. You know, tightened up and then went east.
Mm-hmm.
But it went aimed directly towards New York City, stopped there, and turned around about a 110-degree turn, and then went directly east out. But it was the closest point to New York City on the morning of 9/11.
Hmm.
Now, who knows exactly where the eye was, but the outer bands were the closest to New York City that morning. And then it was actually rain reported on Long Island, and at JFK, there was thunder reported, even at Newark Airport, as well as JFK and LaGuardia.
Hmm.
I bet you folks, you know, wouldn't realize that. I didn't.
No, I didn't either.
But why didn't we hear about it? New York City is not really ready for hurricanes, so they need all the preparation they can get just in case a hurricane hits it. And if there's a chance of a hurricane hitting it, shouldn't they tell people?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't they tell people? Why would they? Could they be so sure the hurricane was going to make a U-turn and head out of town? Kind of makes you wonder about weather control.
Mm-hmm.
That they could be so confident they wouldn't need to alert anyone. And how could we get the media to not talk about it? There's a couple of screenshots I have of the morning weather report on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And you see some cold fronts there, and you see the part of the ocean where you should see a big pinwheel there, big hurricane. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Just an empty spot.
So obvious manipulation there.
Well, it's... I don't know at what level it happened, but I think that the station weather guy for sure would have known that there was a hurricane there.
Hmm.
And for whatever reason, chose not to have it on the weather map. Because, you know, they see the satellite images. You know, how I got to looking at that and found it, you know, I was looking at the fumes and how the particles were traveling. I saw them traveling up, and it was interesting that the white stuff went up and south, and the black stuff seemed to go directly west over the Hudson.
Huh.
It's, you know, we should have wind blowing the same direction for both colors.
Right.
And so I wanted to get a better image, so I was looking for weather satellite pictures, and what is this? It's this big, huge hurricane.
That's amazing.
And nobody had talked about it.
Yeah.
Not only that, there's an image from the International Space Station, where they had to zoom in and be careful not to move the camera one way or another to avoid getting a hurricane in the image. I mean, it's just a very narrow slot they could aim the camera through.
Right.
And there was part of that, of the dialogue that was blocked out.
Hmm.
I've got the video on my webpage.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's some great pictures and at drjudywood.com. drjudywood.com, and you've got pictures of Hurricane Aaron. People can check that out tonight. It's just amazing that this was going on. So if we could speculate a little bit, and I know you probably don't like to do that because you're into the science and you like to have facts, which I really respect. But if we could speculate, then what the kind of the underlying theme then is that obviously weather manipulation was probably going on that day, and is that in somehow? And I'm going to play dumb a little bit here, but is that in somehow affecting, you know, what truly happened to these twin towers? Is that kind of where your research is kind of taking you a little bit?
Yeah, you know, not knowing why that would be there, it does point towards weather manipulation because they chose not to warn anybody, and if you
right.
didn't have control of it, you know, 100% sure control of it. You're going to worry how long that thing stalled out there, or is it going to move west towards the city? Or where is it going to go? And if it stalls out, you're going to worry about the storm surge. Manhattan is only, what, 20 feet above sea level?
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot of reasons why people should be evacuating if there's any chance.
Exactly.
But if 9/11 was, this is something that implicates pre-planning, not just pre-knowledge, but pre-planning.
Mm-hmm.
If 9/11 is going to occur and you want people watching the TV set, you don't want them evacuating.
Right.
So you're not going to alarm them to leave town. So that's one reason for not cluing people in, if the hurricane just happened to be there accidentally. But why would it be there? Well, they're obviously hiding it for a reason. Like even when it passed Bermuda, they said it was heading out to sea, not to be seen again. Out to sea, going northwest. Well, that's towards New York City. And, out to sea, never to be seen again. And they also downgraded it to its tropical storm before it passed Bermuda, when it actually was ramped up to a Category 3.
Wow.
That's something else I thought was kind of weird. That's what the warnings came out as. It's though they're trying to sneak it past there. And, or maybe that was just a fluke. So then I start looking at what do hurricanes do? Well, what do tornadoes do? Gee, they look pretty similar. And after hurricanes and tornadoes pass, you've seen trees that have a car sitting on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
But we assume it got blown up there. Or we assume that a tornado is acting like a vacuum cleaner and picks it up.
Right.
And I started looking at some videos of tornadoes, and some start from the ground. It's like lightning. Going between two plates is a potential difference. It seems like this spinning effect has to do with sort of an electrical field or a magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just keep taking this in. And then I found some pictures from Hurricane Andrew in Florida where there's a tubifor right through a palm tree. Another one was a piece of plywood through the palm tree. And we have flip cars, you know, all the usual scenes like we saw. Yeah, the World Trade Center.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So what phenomenon could be similar? You know, when you see upside-down cars that don't look like they've been tossed around, there's no scratches on them, they just are sat down. Like, there's one from Hurricane Andrew where the car is sitting on a wooden fence.
I saw that. That's amazing. I saw that.
Not a scratch
website.
On it.
Yeah.
How'd he get there?
Right.
It had to have been very gently set down.
Uh-huh.
And then I remembered reading some transcripts from some of the first responders, and they talked about being lifted up and gently set down. And they were trying to think that the wind must have done it because, you know, people need explanations for weird things.
Right.
And there's a whole lot of weird things. You know, those people experience these things. But they experience something that they've interpreted this way. So let's see if it makes sense. You kept gathering things together. But at the same time, I also had been tabulating these other effects, like buildings turning into powder, mm-hmm. then the powder rising up. And you remember when I said I noticed that the coarse dust must have settled out of the air and then become fine, and that's why it started coming up. But then we noticed that, you know, this fine stuff coming up from the street. Well, we can't have that because people are going to start asking questions. What is that fine stuff coming up in the street? It looks like the street is steaming. Okay, and then pretty soon you notice they bring out all of the road cleaners, all the street cleaners, scrub the streets.
Right.
That was that afternoon.
Yeah.
Almost like they took a toothbrush down every groove. And in an earlier article I put together with Morgan Reynolds, I think the caption we put there was, New York makes a clean sweep of it, or New York wasn't the only one to get a hose job. It was this obsessive cleaning. It was pretty interesting. Okay, what do you do with the lawn? They had some nice green grass lawns in front of the World Financial Center. Well, let me go see what they did there. Oh, my gosh. Fresh potting soil dumped on the lawns. It's kind of like putting kitty litter in an oil spill in your garage. Just to soak it up, to absorb whatever it is going on.
Right.
And then I started noticing all these dirt trucks coming in and out, in and out. And would you believe they're still coming in and out? To this day. It's like changing diapers. It's constantly soaking up stuff and carrying it away and bringing in new stuff. There's some ongoing process.
Yeah.
And then I noticed I was doing a word search on what would make molecules repel rather than attract, because it looks like, well, you know, I was talking about the molten metal thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And water would instantly become steam if it were that hot. When it becomes steam, water expands in volume by a factor of 1,600, so 1,600 times more volume than when it's water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, looking at these pictures of the buildings, gee, is there a similar process for solid material? So that's when I started looking at what might cause the molecules to suddenly repel each other rather than attract each other. And looking up that information is when I found the work of John Hutchison. And my goodness, every single thing I had listed was explained. It was a parallel symptom. And let me tell the listeners what I mean by directed energy weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know the name of this gizmo. I've never seen it. You've never seen it. It's not in public view.
Right.
I just defined it as a directed energy weapon because it uses energy that is directed, and it's used as a weapon. And the category of directed energy weapons is huge. Anywhere from a taser to, you know, something that shoots a laser beam to take out bombs in the air that they developed in the Star Wars program. Or crowd control, there's a lot of different things. It's a non-contact type of weapon.
Right.
In the strictest sense, if you use a cell phone to detonate something, you could call that a directed energy weapon. Because your cell phone sends a signal off a satellite to someplace.
And I know the military is using in Iraq sound type devices that would be energy directed weaponry.
Yeah, there's a wide spectrum of waves and of signals, and I'm sure they're used in a variety of ways. Because if you think of it. After Hiroshima, don't you think they kept developing new weapons?
Yeah, definitely.
They didn't halt their research department then.
Right. So now, what is the I know we've been talking about tornadoes. What is the Tesla coil, and how does it relate to tornadoes or the tornado effect?
The Tesla coils create a field around them, like electrostatic field, and You've seen some, and you see arcing from them.
Right.
Well, if you think about tornadoes and hurricanes, you have arcing from them. So there's some kind of a field there. Another way we also know that tornadoes and hurricanes create a field around them is we can feel them. Or know somebody who can.
Yeah.
For example, somebody with arthritis always knows when a storm is coming. There's something they're feeling, they're sensing.
Right.
And growing up sometime in the Midwest, I know when a tornado's coming. You smell it. You feel it. I don't mean necessarily with your nose, but you just know.
Right.
So that there's some field around there, and what John Hutchison does is intersects or interferes different types of energy fields, different radio frequency signals into a volume of space, and things happen in that volume of space or right next to where he thought they were going to happen, and including metals turning to jelly, and things merging together, things going poof, things levitating, a variety of things. And that list of things matches the list that I have identified as evidence at the World Trade Center.
Interesting. So really, you know, the underlying theme that I kind of pick up from this show is that there's a whole host of anomalies that could be happening that the United States has these tools at their disposal. And so, you know, if you see something like the World Trade Center just go poof, as you call it, which I think is a good word for it, that you know, more than likely this is some type of an engineered event. Would that be a good way of saying it?
Yeah, I don't say who did it. You know, other countries might have toys like this.
Sure.
But, you know, if the U.S. didn't do it, why don't they care who did?
Mm-hmm.
That's a question that comes up. Kind of like folks talk about UFOs. Well, if it's been found, something is up there. If it's not, if it doesn't belong to the U.S., aren't they concerned about who it does belong to?
Right, right. Good point. Now, in regards to your research, I'm sure there have been misunderstandings and misinterpretations of your work, and so I'm going to give you the opportunity tonight to set us straight. What common misunderstandings and misinterpretations are there out there about your work?
Well, if you want to suppress information, you describe it with derogatory terms.
Right.
That really sound ridiculous. And you know, first off, that was used was space beams. Ray beams from outer space knocking down the towers. And you heard that term quite a few times. It's probably the most common one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never said where it came from or exactly how it was done. I'm just focused on the symptoms, on the actual evidence.
Yeah.
I've been referred to as Marvin the Martian. But as for the you know, official truth movement, I call it the movement towards the official truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Lenin who first said that, made the quote, best way to control the opposition is to lead it ourselves.
Mm.
And there was another famous quote of, we will lead every revolution against us.
Interesting. Yeah, how true.
So the best way to control it is to lead it and lead it wherever you want it to go and to contain
right.
it.
Right. So in other words, put disinformation out there, but under the guise of it being information.
Correct. and get everyone to be super invested in it, so they beat up anybody who comes along who talks about the actual evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Another common thing I've seen is playing the unity card.
Uh-huh.
But we all have to be in agreement with this. You don't want to be disruptive to the movement. You better agree with us. And so there's this pressure to, you know, jump on a bandwagon mindlessly. And it's good to have disagreements.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world. It's, you know, we're still figuring out what's going on. Let's talk about it. You know, we should all be on the same side.
Right. Exactly. Especially if it's fact based. I mean, what is their fear? You know, what would they be worried about?
The general public can't handle it. They can't handle the truth, so let's give them another lie.
Right.
You know, if you want everyone to be in agreement with something the public can handle, well, let's just repeat the story that 19 bad guys with box cutters outsmarted the U.S. military.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, will they even believe that one?
Amazing. Now, you had talked about Mr. Hutchison. And there is something called the Hutchison effect. Is that part of the whole Tesla scientific process, or is it? Can you expand on the Hutchison effect?
It'd be good to get John on to explain that further. John Hutchison tried to reproduce a lot of what Tesla's work was about,
mm-hmm.
and I guess a lot of people don't realize that the reason why we have alternating current is due to Tesla.
Hmm.
Nikola Tesla was a lot of other things that he put together. Or, you know, a true genius in
right.
what he saw. And he could indeed have come up with the weapon we used to destroy the World Trade Center. And it was, you know, then taken by somebody else and developed further. But there's a lot of interesting ideas and concepts he had. Anyway, John tried to replicate some of his work and accidentally discovered this levitation thing. In fact, that was pretty cool. It is, you know, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And sometimes he gets levitation and sometimes he gets destruction of the material. And someone had described it as this seems to be either lift or disruption of the matter. And so I looked at the World Trade Center and saw there were cars upside down that looked perfectly fine. The ones that weren't upside down were the ones that were really toasted looking. And it's kind of interesting. If you think about it, if things are getting pulled apart, if they're free to float off the ground, they might just come off the ground. But if they're not, they might get ripped apart. And there's various other phenomenon that were discovered in this. So, of course, there's a large group that's out to attempt to discredit John's work. But it's been around 30 years. And, you know, it stood the test of time, and the Canadian government saw fit to name it the Hutchison effect. So it's been documented, it's been acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. And he kind of has been on interviews with you. Is his more a specialized base of knowledge, what he's reporting on, or does he face the same type of, you know, ridicule and slander that you've had to put up with?
First of all, does not fall under the category of directed energy weapons.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Only directed energy. He will never use it as a weapon.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good use for this technology. Free energy,
mm-hmm.
for everyone. We don't need to be paying X number of dollars a gallon for gas. So
right.
you have to stop and think, who's motivated to suppress this? There's, of course, more opposition on the 9/11 stuff than anything, because it's kind of like the biggest crime in history.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more stuff going on there.
Now, you do have people of note that have been impressed by your work, and one of those people is actually Jesse Ventura, who I hope to someday have on a program with you. Do you have much support? I mean, are you finding more and more people understanding what you're showing us, and are they coming to a realization that this was some type of a nefarious work?
There are people, but I think a lot of people are scared.
Uh-huh.
And I have a form on my website where people can send me anonymous messages.
Oh, okay.
And I get supporting messages that way, which are really nice. Thank you to those people who have sent those.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a scary thing, though. But now I really understand the meaning of, I think Patrick Henry had said it, live free or die.
Yeah.
And I really understand it now. If we don't live free, if we don't fight for our freedom, we will not have it.
Right.
And I think a lot of people get scared and want to hope somebody else fixes it. And I did initially, I'll admit.
Mm-hmm.
But it came to a point where I could no longer sit by. And, quoting a lot of people here, what Martin Luther King said, a time comes when silence is betrayal. And I felt that time came.
Right. It's interesting, too, because all of us are coming to this, understanding. For instance, Sheldon Day is someone that you and I both know. And myself, I started understanding. I don't claim to understand everything, but I'm understanding more and more. And I came through that through a point of economics and understanding that, this country was in a lot of trouble. And how could it be that such intelligent, people running the country and economists would essentially bankrupt our country to the point of, insolvency? And you're seeing this in 9/11 and saying, wow, this is very serious, and I need to alert people to this fact. So I see a lot of people that are waking up, and we really need to stick together. Now, I want to get to how we can stick together. That's an important question. But before we do, I've heard on a couple interviews that you've done where from the very beginning you knew that 9/11 was not the way it was being reported, and it had something to do with a phone call from that you had with your mother. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, my first impression was what I saw on the TV. It wasn't right, and I assumed, mm-hmm. Okay, this is a joke. It's just like War of the Worlds on the radio,
yeah.
Except this is a TV version. And I thought, okay, let me check the reality. And my parents lived right next to the Pentagon, or right near the Pentagon. So if the Pentagon were being attacked, they should know. They would be able to look out and see if there are fighter jets overhead protecting things.
Right.
So I called my mother to see if she could look out and see if there were any fighter jets. Nope, no fighter jets. So, the conclusion is, okay, that test says that it's a War of the Worlds hoax.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, wouldn't that...
And you especially would think there would have been fighter jets at the Pentagon, because that was supposedly, quote-unquote, hit after the Twin Towers. So they would
Correct.
Have had time, yeah.
And I think my call actually was after the Pentagon had its issue, whatever mm-hmm. it was that happened at the Pentagon.
Sure.
Including
yeah.
Bill Plant. I just happened to have had my TV recording that morning, and when I played that back, I was watching when things were happening, and he's down the street from the White House and saying, well, we're just all asked to leave the White House. There's fire trucks going by, there's police cars going to where we do not know. And I suspect this has to do with some event at the in New York involving airplanes. and whatever it was that happened at the Pentagon. This was about 9:45.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that he termed it that way. He didn't say, because airplanes hit the World Trade Center, he didn't say airplanes hit the Pentagon. I thought that was excellent.
Yeah.
I like the term, whatever it was that happened at the Pentagon.
Yeah, exactly. That was more truth than most people, you know, had reported on that day.
Now, right, it was true reporting.
Yeah, exactly. It's very rare, but it does happen, I guess, maybe by accident. Now, I want to remind everyone tonight that your website is Dr., and again, it's Dr., drjudywood.com. It's an outstanding website, and people need to check it out tonight. You've got tons of information there that we obviously can't cover in an hour, unfortunately, but and I will be honored to have you back sometime. And also, I want to say again, thank you so much to Sheldon Day for bringing us together so that we could get this information out to as many people as we possibly can. And Sheldon's website is thelightofdayradioshow.com. Judy Wood's website is drjudywood.com. Again, outstanding. There's pictures, there's graphs, there's information there that people need to really check out about 9/11, because everybody should know the truth. And once you know the truth, then we come to a place where we have to figure out what to do, which brings me really to the final question. First of all, what can we do, and what can all of us do to support your research and to expose 9/11?
Well, there's a variety of things. Doing something is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Putting your head in the sand is what you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
For several reasons. One, you kind of add to the problem, but the other is you'll end up feeling helpless. And I think the worst human emotion is to feel helpless. So do something so that you don't feel helpless, but also it helps others. And different people have different strengths. Some people are good at videography. Some people are good at letter writing. Some people are good at talking to people. Educate others. Think. Encourage others to think for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But don't feel helpless. There's a lot of us out here.
Mm-hmm. And really, there's enough of us out there. If we really would touch two or three people, you know, every so often, we could really change the whole climate of you know, understanding about 9/11. Because I know for myself, I talk to people around me, and if you arm people with the facts, they may not come around tomorrow. But I guarantee eventually it chips away at whatever type of resistance they have. And so it's important for us to support people like yourself, Dr. Wood, because of what you're doing. And you know, like you say, we're not all the same. I'm not a PhD, and there are certain things that I cannot, from a fact-based perspective, come up with in some type of laboratory. You know, so I support, you know, people like yourself and really applaud what you're doing. We've got about, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up or like to talk about in the closing moments that you would like to share?
Well, I'd like to give a message to some special people out there and say thank you. Thank you for your thoughts and concerns, and that we're all in the same boat. Together we'll sink, or together we'll float. And I think it's important that we all feel that too.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And also too, at your website, you have past interviews that are outstanding. I've listened to some of them. Again, we've been talking to Dr. Judy Wood. Her website is drjudywood.com. She has some important information on September 11th, and it's just fascinating what she has uncovered. it's definitely a contrarian view than what most people are used to, and that's why it's so important to check it out. It's a voice that perhaps most of us haven't heard, but it's a voice that should be heard. And you know, it's your background that's so impressive too. That when you see what you know, what you have, what your knowledge base is, and then to understand the evidence that you present is so important. I want to thank you tonight for being my guest, Judy. And I hope, in the near future, I can have you back and we can talk further about 9/11 and some of these papers that you've written on your website and some of the research that you're doing.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me on and for getting the word out.
Well, it's a great honor. Again, we've been talking to Dr. Judy Wood tonight. Her website is drjudywood.com. Go there tonight, and I would encourage you to read the news story that came out that says feds say they've solved 9/11 mystery that came out yesterday, and compare that to Dr. Judy Wood's website, and you'll find this news story that came out on the Associated Press to be quite laughable. Again, thank you so much, Judy. I appreciate it so much. We'll be back next week as time brings us closer to the big finale. Good night, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.